Hello, and welcome to the Badger Talks podcast, the podcast that shares interviews with experts from the University of Wisconsin-Madison community about their work, research, and a little bit about what they're like as people, too. I'm your host, Buzz Kemper. Today, we'll be talking about sustainability, and I'm happy to have as my guest, Tom Eggert. Tom has emeritus status at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where he developed classes in sustainability and systems thinking. He taught the first class on sustainability at the UW in 1994 and has received numerous teaching awards. He was a Fulbright Scholar to Latvia and founded the nonprofit Worldwise Microfinance. He also founded the Wisconsin Sustainable Business Council and served as the executive director until his retirement in 2018. He currently teaches a class on financial skills for retirees and serves on the UW Retirement Association. Tom Eggert, thanks so much for being on the program. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to start out with just a definition of sustainability in your world. We hear the word a lot. It's used for energy use, environmental concerns, health, all kinds of things. And in your world, what is sustainability and what is it that you are trying to improve in terms of sustainability?
Yeah, great question. From a pure definitional perspective, sustainability has certainly an environmental component, but it also has a social component, and then it also has a, you know, sort of a, I'll call it a governance component, that creates a likelihood of staying together into the future, of sustaining itself. So it's, you're sustaining something, sustaining people, sustaining a business, sustaining an organization, whatever. And so how do you maximize the chances of sustaining, of keeping that organization, person, business operating, effective, competitive, moving into the future?
Okay.
And so you weave those three things together. It had traditionally been focused on the environmental stuff. And For a long time, sustainability started with, well, let's think about the environment. Let's think about our footprint and how do we do better from a, you know, leaving the earth in no worse shape after we're gone. But then it evolved into a lot of the social stuff. How do we better take care of each other? How do communities succeed and sustain themselves over time? So much broader than just the environmental beginnings for the sustainability movement. And I mean, people still do talk about sustainability and just talk about the environmental stuff. But in reality, it really is broader and has evolved to be broader than that.
So when you work with businesses, and you kind of, you almost invented this. I mean, you taught the first class on sustainability at UW in 1994.
Yeah.
And so you've been at this for a while. So yeah. did you come up with some of the building blocks of this? I would imagine so.
Yeah.
So tell us how this came about, because you couldn't just take everybody else's work and say, I'm going to do this. You had to kind of build the building.
Yeah. Well, so it starts with this axiom that we teach best what we most need to learn. So I had approached the Institute for Environmental Studies before it was even called the Nelson Institute on campus. And they had a graduate program called Conservation Biology and Sustainable Development. And I was interested in the classes that were being taught in sustainable development because I was interested in just taking one. I just wanted to learn about what people were talking about. And the head of the institute at the time, Tom Ewell, said, Tom, we're not teaching any classes in sustainable development. Could you put one together? And so that was the fall semester of 1994.
And what had you been doing before that?
So my background is in law and public administration.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so it was sort of an outgrowth of the public administration stuff at the time. So 1994, we were just coming off of the Clinton administration. The Clinton administration had created the President's Council on Sustainable Development. It was a big deal for the administration. Sam Johnson from SC Johnson was one of the participants in the President's Council. So Wisconsin was represented. And I really thought I was going to be putting together a class that was going to be talking about public sector leadership in this new idea, this new sort of focus. And shortly after that, the Clinton administration left and the first of the Bush administrations came in, mm-hmm. and never was the word sustainability uttered again.
Right, right. And, it's just, yeah.
Right. And, yeah. And it was the same in the state that, you know, that was, we were coming into the Walker administration and, you know, the state just wanted nothing to do with leadership in an area that was an evolving area. Mm-hmm. And so the class that I really had designed, which was going to be about public sector leadership, became about where was leadership coming from. And at the time, it was coming from the business community. Mm. Patagonia, Ben & Jerry's, Toms of Maine, Body Shop, you know, those iconic classic companies that were cut out of a different cloth.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so we studied them. We looked at how they were being successful, even though they weren't focusing on the traditional bottom line. And yet, you know, Patagonia famously did an ad, don't buy this pullover for one Black Friday. And they sold more of those pullovers than they had ever sold before. So it's sort of this
reverse market.
Yeah, right. Like, almost. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Try not to do this and so that everybody wants to do that.
Right.
But, you know, and so the class ultimately evolved to looking at the drivers for action, for mm-hmm. why people were doing stuff. And it was certainly customers. There was evolving customer awareness and desire around businesses that were doing sustainable stuff. So especially retailers, mm-hmm. the Patagonias. But in the mid to late 90s, customers would survey very well. Oh, yes, we would want to support a company that was committed to sustainability. Mm-hmm. But when the business school folks would have those customers followed around, they wouldn't actually make purchasing decisions that were consistent with the values that they were espousing.
Interesting.
It was. Okay. But that did change. In the early 2000s, people kept saying that they wanted to purchase from businesses that were acting in a sustainable, and then they started modeling their purchasing behavior after those values. And mm-hmm. so customers did become a driver, really with actual purchasing behavior. Mm-hmm. Employees became a driver. So people wanted to work for companies that they believed in, and they wanted to feel like they were making a difference in those companies.
Right.
And then, you know, I was putting all kinds of students out into the working world and would survey them, and others were surveying them. And they would say the same thing. Yeah, I don't want to go for, and this is a change from the previous generation, I don't want to go and work for whoever's going to pay me the most money. I mean, if I wanted to do that, you know, I'd go work for Exxon or Shell or, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they weren't. And so companies were competing based on how they were presenting themselves in the sustainability universe. Mm. And that's how they were trying to attract and retain talent. And then you had investors that also started getting on the sustainability bandwagon and saying that they wanted to invest in companies that were acting credibly acting in a sustainable way. And then supply chains got involved. And then very, very far at the end, government sort of started getting involved. And, you know, early on, we'd see things like Wisconsin required all copy paper to be 100% recycled content. Copy paper. And so you'd see little bits and pieces coming out of the government, and that over time evolved into more and more. And so the class started with, you know, my interest in teaching it, a couple of kids that decided that this sounded interesting. And when you're teaching a new class at the university, you get to teach again if students evaluate the class highly and mm-hmm. sign up.
Right.
And so I was really at the beginning of this huge wave of student evolving interest in sustainability. And over the 25 years that I taught classes in sustainability, we added a graduate certificate in sustainability. We added an undergraduate certificate. We added an undergraduate cooperative major and ultimately an undergraduate major, all in a topic that nobody was even, we didn't have any classes on in 1994.
So is this now just one class, or is it now a series of classes?
It became a series of classes.
That's what I would expect, yeah, that it would just keep
so growing. The fall semester class was kind of an intro class, and then I thought it was really important to follow that with what evolve to be a systems thinking class. Mm-hmm. So if you want to change the world, and most of the kids that were signing up for my class wanted to change the world because that's who we are.
Yeah.
If you want to change the world, you have to understand why the world is the way it is.
Right.
And by and large, the world is the way it is because of the systems that underlie all the decisions that are being made. On the first day of class, I would tell them, there was a very famous example from Rome where Rome wanted to reduce the number of cars coming into the city. And so they said, all right, all the even-numbered license plate cars can come in on even-numbered days, and all the odd-numbered license plate cars could come in on the odd-numbered days. And a year into their program, they still had the same number of cars coming into the city. And so they started doing a little exploration.
Okay.
And everybody with even-numbered license plates bought another car and put an odd-numbered license plate on it.
Oh, wow.
So you didn't understand the system. You didn't understand how committed people were to their cars and driving their cars into the city.
Mm-hmm.
You raised a speed bump that people decided, yes, there's a way around this, and we will do this. And
so you wanted to make a quick buck, you would open a car dealership in Rome.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. That is amazing.
So there's just an example of understanding the importance of systems, because it seemed like a good idea. Let's just reduce the number of cars by half without understanding how committed people are to driving a car. And they were going to drive a car. They were just going to be creative at finding ways to drive their car.
Yeah, so, every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. That is amazing. I have so many questions. So the purpose of the bottom line purpose of most businesses, I suppose there are exceptions, but is to make a profit.
Yes.
And either for the owners and the workers who are there or for shareholders or for whoever it is.
Yeah.
How difficult is it to get the Venn diagram of economic sustainability and profit margin and environmental and other forms of sustainability that will make the earth a better place? Are those in conflict, or is it fairly easy to make those things work together and all the wagons pulling in the same direction?
I love that you asked that question, because the traditional answer still is, all this environmental stuff, the sustainability stuff, is an add-on cost.
Right.
And it is inconsistent with maximizing return to shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the real answer, and there's lots of academic proof, is that the most successful companies are, in fact, embracing sustainability, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
So let's talk about energy. If you're going to be more sustainable from an energy perspective, that means you're going to be using less energy. You're going to be more effective or efficient with the energy that you're using. Maybe
right.
you're putting in new machines that are more efficient, whatever it might be. But what's the other outcome of using less energy? You're spending less on your energy bill.
Exactly, right.
So you're helping the bottom line by spending less on your energy bill.
Mm-hmm.
If you can turn a greater percentage of raw materials into finished product, meaning a smaller percentage becomes waste,
mm-hmm.
you're drawing the most value out of those raw materials and turning it into something that you can sell. Waste you have to pay for. Raw materials you pay for, waste you have to pay for to get rid of. And so it's really inefficient to produce a lot of waste.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's also very unsustainable to produce a lot of waste. And so we're talking about businesses operating thoughtfully and sustainably, and maximizing, the things that business is supposed to be about. Business does three things. I mean, they work on cost minimization, they work on customer acquisition and customer servicing,
mm-hmm.
And they work on risk reduction.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's not hard. Sustainability falls into all three of those categories.
Mm-hmm.
Customers, now we know from surveys and from actual behavior, are attracted to companies that are acting in a more sustainable way. Mm-hmm. Companies that are acting in a more sustainable way are minimizing costs and they're reducing risk.
Mm-hmm.
If climate is in fact a risk, and I know the current administration doesn't believe that, but if climate is in fact a risk, and I think most businesses do believe that from a supply chain risk perspective or from how are people going to be able to afford your products, Mm-hmm. Risk minimization leads companies to acting in a more sustainable way also.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I imagine that that sometimes for customers, convenience might
Trump.
Kind of, yeah, you know, sustainability, like it's yep. easier to buy from this company, even though they're maybe not so sustainable.
Right.
Is it easy to find out for the average consumer? Is it easy to find out if you need to buy a widget and you have five choices of companies from whom you can buy it? Is it easy to figure out which one is going to be the most sustainable purchase choice?
No.
Okay. I was really hoping it wouldn't be no, but I get it.
There, you know, and I've had students work on apps, you know, focusing on Madison companies, and so they evaluate all the Madison retailers that students normally, you know, patronize, and come up with schemes that they would rank them, and then you could look on your app. But there's no easy way to make those decisions.
Okay.
It's possible. I mean, that information is out there. But for the average consumer, they're not going to spend that much time trying to to find that information.
Yeah, and I would think that businesses would really want to get that information out. You know, if you are somebody like Patagonia, and I'm a rock climber, so I'm very familiar with that company.
Yeah.
If you're a company like them, you would want people who are enjoying the outdoors to know that you are running your company in a more sustainable manner than other companies, so that when you need that wind shell jacket or
better sweater pullover or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever it is, that you're going to buy it from them as opposed to someone else. But it's not that easy, apparently.
Well, Patagonia has this unique niche in the market that, I mean, they've really pushed hard on sustainability, and it's part of their branding, it's part of their marketing, it's part of their reputation.
Okay.
And so the argument for other companies acting like Patagonia was, that's a unique customer base that really will pay more and value those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And while that was true at one point, I don't think that's true any longer.
Mm-hmm.
But so we still face that hurdle of how does that information get out?
Right.
For Patagonia, it's part of their it's part of their identity.
Yeah, and would think that all companies, especially companies that are dealing with outdoors enthusiasts, that they would want to make that part of the marketing plan. Who are your students? Are these people who are just interested in the topic in general? Are they people who maybe want to start a business and they want to know how to do that from the ground up in a sustainable manner? Who is it that signs up for your classes, and what are their goals?
Yeah, so it's very varied.
Okay.
I think the one, and it's not completely consistent, but almost a given for UW students, is that they feel this broad obligation to making a difference in the world.
Okay.
And so sustainability is one avenue to feel like you're making a difference in the world. There's lots of others. You can become doctors, you can become teachers, you can become all kinds of things and make a difference in the world. But there's, certainly the business school attracts a lot of students.
Yeah.
I had a lot of students over time that just thanked me for making them feel good about wanting to be a business practitioner in a way that was consistent with their values. And that's really all sustainability offers, is that, you want to feel good about the company that you're working with. You want to feel like you're making a difference. There is now a way to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they go on and they take all kinds of different positions. For the first, 20 plus years that I was teaching, there were no sustainability positions in companies.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to sort of find something else to do. And then when the questionnaire came around, is anybody interested in sustainability? We're getting some questions about, what we're doing, and customers want to know, and we don't have anybody that can answer this. Is there anybody interested? And then you can raise your hand.
Mm-hmm.
You might be an accountant. You might be in human resources. You might be in supply chain. But when the opportunity comes along, raise your hand and become part of the sustainability group. That's now changed. There are actually companies hiring kids right out of college into sustainability positions.
Nice.
That's relatively new.
Yeah.
So
wow, that's really terrific. Are you still lecturing? Are you still teaching classes? You have emeritus status, I realize.
Yes. But, yeah. So I'm not teaching classes at the university any longer. Okay. I am teaching classes outside the university through a retirees organization. And so one of the drivers of sustainability is investors. And so I spent a lot of time sort of talking to investors, mostly do-it-yourself investors. How do you make your portfolio more sustainable?
Right, right. So, okay. Well, I might be sitting in on your retiree classes at some point. Yeah. At some point, I've got to retire, but I don't know. I love my job and my coworkers too much to give it up quite yet. I just want to ask one more kind of specific question. But you were a Fulbright scholar to Latvia. Yes. It says in your bio. What was that about? So, that seems like a kind of an arcane thing. Not everybody can make that claim.
So it was this unique opportunity that came along. University of Stockholm has a college in Latvia, in Riga, and they were looking for a Fulbright person to come and lecture on sustainability. And so I had, gone through the application process to become a Fulbright scholar, and then you wait for the right opportunity to come along. And this seemed like so much fun to, I mean, I knew nothing about Latvia.
Okay.
And you get there through Sweden, which was how we got there. I took my son along. And kids in Latvia are no different than kids in this country. Okay. And so, it was a fantastic opportunity.
Wow, that sounds great. How did you deal with the language?
So if they were going to be at the University of Stockholm in Riga, they had to speak English because classes were offered in English.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's so, okay.
Yeah.
That solves that problem.
Yeah.
That is so terrific. So I just a couple more questions, but one just a broad kind of sweep up question.
Yeah.
Is there anything about sustainability that you would like listeners to this podcast to know, but I haven't asked the right question to get to?
Well, so what I did want to talk about is we put an addition, redid our house, and really tried to use the most sustainable approaches in doing it and just be very thoughtful about it. And so that process, it seemed unusual at the time. I think it's much more common now. But to be very thoughtful about insulation and making sure that there were no leaks. And so we were not having to, pay to heat air that we were then exhausting to the outside of the house.
Right.
We put in, what do you call the things, when the roof comes out over the wall?
Oh, eaves?
Eaves, yes. So we calculated the depth of the eave so that on the longest day, June 21st, that the sun would not be touching the windows at noon.
Oh, okay.
So keeping the sun off the window so that you're not passively heating the house during the summer.
Right.
That's what you don't want to do. Using sustainable products for both the exterior of the house. Yep. Well, structurally, we used certified lumber that was harvested sustainably. And there was no FSC certified lumber in Madison, so we had to bring it down from the Twin Cities.
What does that mean?
It just means that the forest is managed in a sustainable way so that it's not clear cut, there's not a lot of pesticides used.
Okay.
And
what do the initials stand for?
Forest Stewardship Council.
Okay.
So there's a group.
Great.
FSC that does this certification of forests.
And you had to go to Minneapolis?
We had to bring wood down. And these were just 2x4s, 2x6s, things
like
that.
But that's kind of distressing news. You'd want to think that in Madison, Wisconsin, you could get.
And I'm sure if we would do it again, it would probably be available now.
Okay.
There'd be other challenges. Okay. We wanted to put in a cork floor. You harvest cork out of a cork oak tree, and it doesn't kill the tree. So the tree just produces more cork, and so it's endlessly renewable is what I was trying to say.
I did not know that. That is the essence of renewability.
Correct.
Right there.
Correct.
Okay, cool.
And so we used hardwood in some other places, and we got it from the Indian tribe up by Green Bay, the Menominee. Because the Menominee Tribal Enterprises sells wood that's sustainably harvested from their forests. And so I just make the point, you can be very thoughtful about you know, anything that you do in your house, even the appliances that you replace.
Right.
There's now ratings on all appliances on energy use, and, you know, you can try and pick the ones that use the least amount of energy. And so for day-to-day decisions that people can make, there is a sustainability component that, if you just think about it a little bit, can become part of the decision-making process.
Yeah. Efficiency, is just a huge thing. I know in automobiles, in appliances, how much energy is actually going into making the machine do what it's supposed to do, and how much of it is wasted as in heat or something else. Terrific.
Well, and there was all the question when the hybrids came out and we had gotten a Prius early on, what's going to happen with all those batteries? And so, you know, the answer is sort of build it and they will come, right?
Right.
It's sort of the field of dreams kind of ideology.
Yeah.
So now, you know, you can recycle hybrid batteries well.
Yeah.
Now, you couldn't at the time that we were buying our first Prius.
Right.
Or probably even our second Prius.
Right.
But as there is demand for people to recycle these batteries, because there's valuable heavy metals in them.
Yeah.
And people figure out a way to do it.
Right.
In fact, that has happened.
Yeah, it's true. It is kind of a build it and they will come kind of situation. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of the cart leading the horse, but it eventually works because people will realize, oh, there's a need for something, and necessity being the mother of invention.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, terrific.
I mean, we still live in this great society where if somebody identifies a need, there will be somebody that'll figure out a way to meet that need.
So. Yeah, one would hope, and usually it does work out that way.
Right.
And then the last thing I want to ask you is just, what do you do when you're not dealing with all the sustainability stuff? Do you have hobbies, sports that you participate in? What do you like to do in your off time if you have any?
So I did formally retire just before the pandemic.
Okay.
And now I'm spending more time than I ever was working. I run a nonprofit that makes small loans in the developing world. It's called Worldwise Microfinance.
Okay.
We had started in Haiti. We expanded to the Philippines, added the DR, and then just recently, post-retirement, added three countries in Africa.
Okay. Dominican Republic.
Yes. And so... it's, you know, we're making a difference in lives, in individual lives, not at the macro level, but that's okay. I mean, sometimes you need to just start at the individual. Yeah. And we target women. If in a family you provide additional income to a woman and additional income to a man, studies have shown that the family is going to benefit far more by providing that income to the woman than that she will.
Oh man, I would love, that's another whole interview right there. I would love to know all the research behind that.
Yes.
But I guess I won't open that can of worms right now, but let's have you back.
Okay.
That would be a terrific thing to talk about. That's great. And so do you have any, your hobbies are your work then, apparently?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time. We have a cabin up north.
Okay.
And I'll split time, my wife and I split time between Madison and up there. In fact, we're there 2 days ago.
Okay.
Came back.
Okay.
Partly for this, partly for some other things.
Well, so. I appreciate that.
Yes,
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. Terrific. Tom, thanks so much. This has been really, really informative, and I feel like there's another few avenues we could go down. So I hope to be able to have you back. But but thank you for your time. This has been very, very informative.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Badger Talks podcast. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Tom Eggert. Please browse our previous episodes for other topics that may be of interest to you. The Badger Talks podcast is a creation of UW Connects and produced at Audio for the Arts Recording Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our engineer is Maggie Shays. Our music is composed by Bill Purdy and performed by the UW Marching Band. I'm Buzz Kemper. Thank you for listening.